Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. If you're watching, and certainly maybe even if you're listening, things might look and sound differently. That's because I'm in, I guess, South Central Mississippi.
Florence, Mississippi.
Florence, Mississippi, for the Twin Lakes Fellowship, which is hosted by First Presbyterian Church in Jackson, Mississippi. And we're delighted to take a moment out of our day and out of this fellowship just after lunchtime to gather together and talk about church planting. So I have some friends here with me. I'm very happy to introduce first. We have Lee Hutchings, C. Lee Hutchings, who's senior pastor of Trinity PCA in North Canton, Ohio, planted the church there. We're going to be talking about church planting. So you're an expert. Welcome, Lee. It's good to see you.
I'm an expert what not to do. I can share all my mistakes and what you shouldn't try. But yeah, great.
Do you have a Hall of Fame ministry?
You know, it's funny because, you know, you plant a church and people ask, well, what are you going to name it? And, you know, different coaches and experts that say, oh, think of something that would be the city in Canton, Ohio. You know, it's called the Hall of Fame City. So I joked about maybe Hall of Faith Presbyterian, but my big concern was thinking of, I mean, all kidding aside, was like, okay, what's something that maybe 30 years from now we look back and say, oh, why did we name it this? So like Trinity PCA, you know, it's hard
pretty
to
say.
Yeah, pretty safe. So we went safe.
One of the standards.
Yeah, one of the standards. So we had some other names in the running, but didn't go with Hall of Faith, and that was a good call.
Yeah, well, that's good.
one of the things we did right.
Yeah. We also have with us Ben Cappers. That's how we Midwesterners might say it. Do you prefer coppers?
Coppers. You got it.
Even though you're a Midwesterner, you're falling,
you a lot,
falling, falling prey to, well, see, at least I know well enough
that's
to
right.
ask. Ben Cappers, who is a pastor of All Saints Reformed Church in St. George, Utah, though he comes from the Sheboygan area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Oostburg, Wisconsin area. That's welcome, right. Ben. It's good to see you.
Yeah. Good to be here.
Yeah. Well, today we're going to be speaking about planting ordinary means of grace churches and speaking about Ben's experience and Lee's experience. Obviously, this is something near and dear to our hearts at Reform Forum, things we want to do. But planting churches is difficult in its own right, but it can be, the difficulty can be multiplied and added to depending on the context you're in, whether that may be an urban environment, a rural environment, an environment where there might be lots of Mormons, especially out in Utah. You name it. There could be a whole host of things, and not every situation, no two situations is going to be identical. So we're going to talk about that conversation, talk a bit about your own experience and dive on into that. But before we even get to that, I'd love to hear just a little bit about your own personal history here at Twin Lakes.
Yeah.
When was the first time you guys came?
Oh, you know, I was thinking about that earlier today. I think both Ben and I attended, we overlapped a little bit in seminary. We attended Reformed Theological Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm just like LeBron James. I'm a kid from Akron, Ohio. So my wife and I
Frank Caliendo, yeah, to the Morgan Freeman voice of you.
Exactly. So we moved to seminary in 2008 and didn't know anybody in Mississippi. But we really fell in love with the people down here and had a great experience at the seminary. And I got an internship and worked at a church in the area. And so I think my first Twin Lakes experience was 2009 or 2010. Wow. So I haven't been every year, but most, and ironically, it's fun because having moved back to Ohio in 2018 and 19 to plant Trinity, when I lived around here, you know, I'd come down for the day or a couple sessions, but it's a lot of fun now flying in because I got to stay here. So a lot of the late night conversations, time with friends, and Ben is in my company of pastors. We have the various groups we have. And so we're staying in the same lodge, and it's not just, I mean, there's great teaching. It's so refreshing and encouraging. To drink deeply and to be reminded of these great truths that we are privileged to proclaim, but also then to sit under other gospel ministers and be refreshed ourselves and for our own heart. And so I've been coming here, for a long time now, and each year is different, but each year is a great and rich blessing.
Wow. What about you, Ben? When was your first time?
I was just a few years ago. Yeah. So I was ordained in the Reformed Church of America, I went to RTS like Lee. And so I didn't have much interaction with the PCA or places like First Pres or Twin Lakes because it just wasn't something that was high priority for someone who's, you know, going to go back into the mainline Dutch world. But I came into the PCA in maybe like 2014. And then it was really when I started church planting, somebody was like, you got to come to Twin Lakes. Twin Lakes is all about church planting. A lot of people at Twin Lakes who want to see churches planted, and especially in unique regions. So I was like, okay, it's great. Yeah. And a lot like Lee said, I came and it's a good opportunity for networking, but you know, you preach all the time, you speak all the time, getting to have somebody like David Strain just go through Revelation and, you know, speak to our hearts and help us, equip us to do it. That's excellent. But in my own context in Southwest Utah, it's very lonely. I mean, it's not just like there's no other Reformed churches. There's really hardly any Christians at all. And so having a place where you can come and see people and you can have those late night conversations, you know, that's every bit as much the blessing as the teaching is.
Yeah, First Pres of Jackson is very generous to put this on for us and invite guys to come. And I think they're committed to it being a real respite for guys in ministry.
You getting a call?
No, I'm not. exactly. Yeah, exactly. The ministry or the church people find anywhere. But I think they, you're going to have to edit this out now, aren't you?
No, we'll roll with it.
We roll with it?
Okay. We'll just pretend like we're the bullpen or something, and they're calling us up. They need a reliever or something.
Yeah.
Speaker's down. He's having a tough time.
They're calling for Lee now.
Yeah. Ian Hamilton, talking about John G. Payton. But this really is, they're committed to it being, I think, a respite, and they know guys and ministry is not easy. I mean, we talk about, we have the greatest job in the world to proclaim the excellencies of Christ, the whole counsel of God, to come alongside people in every season of life. But those are wearing challenges as well. And so they take good care of us. It's fun to see old friends and to make new friends. And it really becomes a highlight of the year. But one of the things also I really appreciate, I mean, there's free time, but every day there's various interviews guys get up and who are all literally all over the world. I mean, we've heard reports from guys in Europe, church planting in India,
Malawi,
you know. So it's not just church planting on a local level, but seeing the kingdom come all over the world. Wow. And it's so encouraging to hear of how God is working. Sometimes I think we can all struggle with being insulated, and we become so tunnel vision just in the whatever problems or challenges we may be facing in our own context. But to see that it's the same gospel. It's the same Christ working in all kinds of different cultures and contexts and places. And yet it's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. And you come and it's just your heart swells with thanksgiving and joy. It's seeing and being with all the brothers. Twin Lakes is a great, awesome time.
I'd love to hear about both of your experiences in planting churches. But before we get there, I think there's at least one important context. And it's the fact that Lee has some experience here in this Jackson area, being a Hollywood actor. I don't know if we need to go into the whole story, but I would. Did you ever qualify for a SAG card?
I didn't. You know, I think they kicked him out of the union. Although I did get union wages, I guess. So the movie The Help, which was filmed. And this interview is only supposed to be, an hour? We can go a long time if we keep talking about this. So the movie The Help was filmed in Jackson. We were living in Jackson at the time. I actually never read the book. And so I went with some friends, and my wife, Diane, had read the book, and they had a casting call for extras. So we went to the casting call. I was standing off in the corner. I had no interest and no desire. And this lady comes over and says, "Sir, no, the line's over here." And they were looking for more men. And I said, "No, I'm just here with my wife." And so they said, no, come over here. I said, "Okay." And it's take my picture. And like 2 weeks later, I get a call. I said, "Sir, you've been cast. Can you make a costume fitting in Greenwood, which is in the Delta, about an hour and a half away?" So I thought, oh my God, I better read the book and see what I've just agreed to be an extra film. And we filmed
At least we didn't get cast as the pie.
That is true. Amen to that. It could have been a lot worse. I tried to, for fun, make up a backstory of my character. My wife didn't.
You're doing all this character work?
I'm a method actor. You didn't know this. I'm a method actor. So I was trying to get into character. Right. I came up with a whole backstory. But I was standing on the Capitol steps. Emma Stone, her character.
Miss Stone.
That's right. Miss Stone. She comes out. Yeah, the production assistants were very persnickety. And she came walking out of the building. And we spent, I bet, 2 hours on a hot September day filming that poor girl, like, running down the stairs and walking slowly. So I was standing in a tan suit with a red tie, and they gave you these these non-tobacco fake cigarettes. But they look like a cigarette. They smell like it. But the name of the brand is called Ecstasy. And it's like they hand you this thing, but it looks like a cigarette, smells like. And so I'm just sitting there like, what am I doing? And here I'm, you know, I was a year from ordination. I'm thinking, this is going to kick me out of the piece. And I had a lot of, it was funny, but they told us in between takes, we could go into the building for air conditioning. And they said, please don't talk to Miss Stone. She's working. And I said, hey, I'm working too. I'm getting paid for this just as she is. And she was actually really nice. She came over and talked to us, and we talked about restaurants in the area. So every time I see her on TV, I say, hey, that's my co-star.
Yes.
And if you watch,
you congratulate her when she wins an Oscar.
If you watch the trailer, you have to pause it. If you blink, you'll miss it. But if you watch the trailer, that's the scene where I'm in. And when they showed the thing at the Academy Awards, so my icebreaker question in a new group setting is, my image has been on the big screen at the Oscars.
But you're one of the extras in
one of their go-to
sizzle reel things.
Things like that. So, you know, it's like you say, I'm glad you cleared the air. I don't think I have an IMDb page yet, but no, I'm just kidding. But that's Mississippi. We love living in Mississippi because it's a cultural experience, and you know, movies and celebrities. And William Faulkner said, to understand the world, you must first understand a place like Mississippi. And living here 10 years, we loved it. It was great.
That's amazing. Well, Ben, tell us about your story a bit. I'd love to hear about your path in ministry. You already mentioned you were ordained into the RCA, but I'd love to hear about your seminary travels and, you know, being ordained in the RCA and eventually making your way into the PCA and then planting a church in St. George, Utah.
Yeah. So I grew up in the RCA. I went to RCA camps, RCA college. I spent a semester at the RCA seminary before I realized that is not me. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know who I was. I just really knew I wasn't that. Uh-huh. Anyways, just kind of providence brought me to RTS, and that was kind of a whole rigmarole, because to get ordained in the RCA without going to the RCA seminary, you have to do what we call purgatory. You got to do summer classes for ordination.
Oh, they do that at Calvin to the CRC guys, the same thing.
Yeah, so I did that. But I was pretty committed to being in the RCA, and there's a few other guys at RTS that were as well, so that was encouraging. Went through all of that, and then we got to 2013, 2014, and stuff in the RCA just kind of crumbled, and there are a few things that happened where a number of us thought we could be brought up on charges anytime now. The protections we had were taken out of the Book of Church Order, and I thought, I don't really want to be brought up on church charges. That's going to make it a lot harder to change denominations and make it hard for our church. And so then we did a lot of work to try to figure out where to go, and we ended up, for the church I was at, the PCA was just the best option. And so we left the RCA for the PCA with a number of other churches in the Chicago area. And then there were some others. Of course, Kevin DeYoung left the RCA for the PCA. Everybody always says, oh, you left with Kevin. I'm like, no, I left a year before Kevin. Yeah. He left
Kevin. Kevin, you know, followed you.
Kevin takes his cues from me, I guess.
Kevin DeYoung takes his cues from Ben Coppers.
So we did that, and it was great, and served for about almost 9 years at the church there in the Chicago area.
Your first PA was Chattanooga, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember that was fun.
Yeah, it was.
What was the specific church for people that are listening that might?
I was at First Church in Lansing, Illinois.
Yeah.
And historic church. I don't know how old now, probably 160 years or something like that. So going from that to church planting,
that was a big
difference. You go from big steeple church, big membership, to no steeple church,
Do they have a lot of Dutch churches, especially long old ones? They like to put a picture of the Dominie, and they have a whole like wall of all. Yeah. Do they have that in Lansing?
We had that,
and so that must have been a big shock because then now it's just like your picture.
No, we borrow a building. I don't even have a picture. No, there's no picture.
It's even a bigger step. Yeah,
it was really quite something because the church I grew up in, we had kind of the Hall of Fame, pastor wall.
He would have busts in his church, not. Pictures.
Yeah, yeah. In cases.
In cases. So we had that line, and then I go to the church that I served at, and I see all these pictures on the wall, and I thought, that guy looks familiar. Mm-hmm. And it was that there was a pastor in Lansing in the church I served that had, 50 years before or whatever, mm-hmm. had taken a call from that church to my home church that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And it turns out his grandson and I were best friends in high school. I had no idea that we had any of that kind of connection. But that goes to show you it's a small Dutch world. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's how I ended up in the PCA. It was just, it made sense. Even though it was a little painful to leave my Dutchness and the Heidelberg mm-hmm. Catechism behind, it was... Mm-hmm. It was the right move for us.
The prayer of the Dutch availeth much.
There's a lot of us in now, so.
Yeah, that's right, you are.
That's great. It's amazing to hear about the transfer and moving into the PCA, but then there's another layer of a change, and to go from, like you mentioned, a more long-established church to a church plant can be a big step and a big jump. I'm wondering if you've had any experience with church plants before or just awareness or interaction through presbytery. I'm curious about the story in the background that what eventually worked in your heart to maybe consider this transition.
Yeah, so I had some experience with church planting before. I served as the chairman of the missions committee of the Chicago Metro Presbytery for a few years. And that was helpful. I'd have a chance to interact with our church planters then and never envisioned myself being on the planting end uh-huh. of that equation, but really found them to be encouraging. We had a guy right in the south side of Chicago, really rough neighborhood, and he was planting, and I got to go watch him interact with the people in the neighborhood. And I mean, he was highly respected, and it was really encouraging to see that. And then the church I pastored before, we planted a church, so I had opportunity to be on the kind of the sending end.
How did you do that? Did you have a core group that you sent out? Yeah. Were you okay? Did you start with a Bible study or anything? Or I'm curious about the steps.
No, not really. It was more of a geographical thing. Yeah. So we were in Illinois, but real close to the border. Mm-hmm. And then more and more people were moving across the border because you could pay about a quarter of the property taxes on the other side of the state line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were on the wrong side of the state line, I would say. So people would move away, and then
even the Chicago Bears, maybe.
Yeah, right. So people would move away, and they'd be like, "I don't really know where to go to church." And sometimes I think, "Well, you should have thought of that before you moved." But eventually, it was like, "This makes sense." And so we kind of targeted a region out there and set up, just kind of set the idea in motion, mm-hmm. and then it went. So that wasn't we're picking a place in the middle of nowhere. It was much more local. This makes sense for our church. And so that's kind of what we mm-hmm. did. So different, very different from what the church that I have planted looks like. Mm-hmm. But it was still an experience on the mm-hmm. on the front end that was helpful before moving out myself.
Was the St. George opportunity something that was presented to you? Is it something that you got involved with investigating yourself? I'm curious how that connection happened.
I visited the area in 2019 with a group from our previous church, and I would tell people.
For this reason, or was it
on
vacation?
Tell people from the church, primarily youth, I'll bribe you with mountains if you let me pound the Bible into your head for 7 hours a day. And so we would call them discipleship trips. And anyway, so I came out. And the first day I was here, I fell and shattered my elbow. Mm. And that was, painful. Three surgeries later, it was. But what that meant is for that entire week, I couldn't drive.
Oh.
And so I sat and looked around, which Southwest Utah is a great place to sit and look around. So I sat and looked around. And, whenever we were driving someplace, I'd see all these little white steeples everywhere. And I was like, where's all the churches? Mm-hmm. And they're just... there weren't any churches. So that kind of sent me digging more out of curiosity. It wasn't like, I'm going to move there. It's like, wow, this hard to believe a place like this exists in the United States. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of sent me looking anyways. That's the genesis of eventually mm-hmm. kind of moving from, well, that's fascinating to that's really concerning to somebody should do something about that. And then talking to M&A, mostly that somebody should do something mm-hmm. about that. And then over time working with Mission North America, it just kind of was like, well, maybe you should be the one who does something about that. Mm-hmm. But Utah is part of the Northern California Presbyterian, the PCA. So it's the northern half of California, Utah, and Hawaii. We're all in the same presbytery.
It shows how terrible my geography is, because I hear Utah. I don't think Northern California.
No, I know. So I fly to all my Presbyterian meetings. And but anyway, so they didn't have any interest in Southern Utah. Not because it's like, you know, we hate Southern Utah. It's just we don't have anybody that wants to go there. Yeah. There have been a couple things that have been tried there that for different reasons hadn't gotten the kind of traction that they needed to keep going. And there just was a skepticism. Are there enough resources? You know, is this guy crazy mm-hmm. coming out here? And but when I said, I'll bring all my own funding, you know, I'll do all the fundraising. I don't need the Presbytery to bankroll us. I said, I'll bring some people with me, you know, so we're not going to be coming alone. We had a few other families that moved from Chicago together with us.
You got some triathloners that are going to come on? There's a good race out there. Yeah. Even the half Ironman, isn't there?
In yeah, Paris? There was. The yeah. city got oh, tired of hosting it. So
they moved.
Yeah, not anymore. But it's okay. St. George really, has so much tourism money, yeah, they don't,
yeah,
the Ironman isn't yeah. necessary.
You know, having known Ben and being friends with him for years, that's always one I think just really cool and encouraging part of your story, because a lot of times church planters, you are called to places where there already is kind of a core group, or there already is someone who has kind of already had that heart. So we need a reformed and confessional, healthy, Bible-believing mm-hmm. church yeah. in this area. But the Lord kind of laid it on your guys' heart, and then you brought the core group kind of yeah. with you, rather than
yeah.
The core group bringing you in. Yeah. You brought the core group yeah. from your home church.
I can't really see how it would have worked any other way.
Yeah, right.
I mean, sure, we could have gone, and as Providence would have it, you know, there's been a lot of people who've come. Mm-hmm. But to have that critical mass you need for people mm-hmm. to want to come be a part of it, and just for sanity's sake, you know, you move into yeah. a place knowing people you have a relationship with already. Yeah. And that was really important. But when I first started talking with the guys in Utah, the PCA guys in Utah about coming here, we had a conversation with Robbie Plemons, who's a pastor of PCA Church in Park City. And he did his best to convince us, like, this is probably not a good idea, you know, and in a holy way, you know, it was a holy way, because he's like, you need to know that this is not,
it's gonna be hard.
This is not going to be easy. It's going to be really difficult. And there's some healthy skepticism. But when I was able to say, we'll bring our own funding, a lot of that is due to the generous churches that are represented at Twin Lakes. And we'll bring people. Then it was like, well, this might have a chance. And so, but if it wasn't for the outside funding from churches like the ones represented here at Twin Lakes, and if it wasn't for people willing to invest their lives in it, like, you know, it wouldn't have been able to happen, at least not in the same way. But with that kind of a model, we were able to begin to reach and plant a confessional church in an mm-hmm. area that, you know, the nearest one is in Las Vegas, which is probably over 2 hour drive from here,
yeah,
from St. George yeah. to there. Yeah.
I want to get back to that and talk more about what it actually looks like on the ground to get a confessional church started. But Lee, I'd love to hear your story as well in North Canton.
Yeah, so a little bit different in that I was an assistant pastor.
They came to him.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, exactly. You know, but I was an assistant pastor. We loved living, again, in Jackson, Mississippi. had dear friends at our church where we were ministering, and I had met a mutual friend of ours in the Reform world who's on the board, Mark Van Drunen, who's saying, hey, there's people, there was starting to be some people they'd met, and just the timing wasn't right. Some people who were interested in northern Stark County, north of Canton, Jackson Township, some other areas. And so there had already been some seed money that had been given to the Ohio Presbytery and the PCA. And I jokingly said, when they reached out to me, I said, you guys, I know how to shovel snow. So that's why you're asking. I had not thought, I was a discipleship pastor at our church of a couple hundred member church. And so I didn't, see myself as a church planner. I didn't see myself as kind of the typical church planner. I mean, I love being a pastor. And I think one of the mistakes I had in my thinking about it at the time was thought, well, I want to be a pastor, and being a church planter is, no, there are different challenges, there are different opportunities. But I think I had a false dichotomy of saying there's either a confessional pastor or you're a church planner. Mm-hmm. And the idea of fundraising or kind of the entrepreneurial aspect mm-hmm. of it. But if I'm really honest with it, I think looking back, I thought I had good reasons why, like, no, I'm not a church planner. But I think a lot of that just was my own human fear. Like, well, what if we try? And what if I fail? Mm. But once I could at least be honest about maybe some of my fears, it's not that they lost, not that they went away, but I realized, well, whose glory is this for? Mm. Am I in ministry to make a name for myself? Mm-hmm. Am I in ministry for a career, or is this a calling? And if we can try, if we believe what we preach, that we serve a sovereign God who ordains all things, and if I can trust him with my forever and salvation, as we've just celebrated Resurrection Sunday, if I can trust him with my eternity, then I can certainly trust him with today and tomorrow. And, sometimes within that, we think of strategy or planning. And I think it's a great challenge, even for confessional church planning our own day, is do we really trust the Bible? Mm-hmm. The Bible, not just in its authoritative inerrancy, but its sufficiency for ministry. Mm-hmm. That, again, you don't have to have stupid human pet tricks. You don't have to come and all the conversations and coaches and visions and contextualization and planning, all that stuff, which there's a place for all that, I'm not denying. But the Lord builds his church. And so, so through multiple conversations, I had said no a couple times. I said no.
Really?
Yeah, I said, and I gave in one email, I gave a list of three reasons why I'm not your guy. And I don't think I said movie star, but maybe that was one of them. I know you like that tidbit about
Stone might need me.
Stone might, yeah. We really a great duet someday. But so I finally realized, I didn't want to look back one day and say, boy, the Lord was, the same kind of thing. I'm from Northeast Ohio. Northeast Ohio is unique, unlike Western Pennsylvania, which there's not many Scotch-Irish. There wasn't a history of Reformed and Presbyterian circles and churches. So our presbytery is not large at all, maybe 11 or 12 churches, including church plants now. And so I would go home and visit my friends in our presbytery and worship with my family in the Lord's Day. And talk to people who are driving an hour, driving all over. And then it's hard to build fellowship and to live life as a Christian and community. So we really, both my wife and I started to feel that tug on our hearts to say yes. So we moved, it went from like a little similar to Ben in this. Well, I was an assistant pastor. We had a good sized staff at a medium sized church to all of a sudden, there was some seed money given and maybe two families in North Canton who were in. So we had a kind of just an interest meeting, and it was a snowy day, but there was like two other families that showed up. Mm-hmm. So we started Trinity in 2019 in our living room with about 15 to 20 people, but by just going through the Bible. But that's kind of how I got. So there was some seed money given. There were some people who were interested. Some people eventually came, some people weren't sure. But I think it was just the recognition of Jackson, Mississippi is a wonderful place, but I realized there's an embarrassment of riches, of great PCA and other Reformed churches in this area. Yeah. But my hometown, people are having a drive and so a need for solid Bible believing, ordinary means of grace ministry. was really lacking in our context. And so we moved back, and I can't emphasize planting a church and then a year later a global pandemic breaking out is fantastic. I highly recommend it. So there's just all kinds of unforeseen things, but by God's grace, the Lord builds his church. The word goes forth. It doesn't return void. And even like COVID, we joke about it, but even COVID presented opportunities to keep the main thing the main thing, to emphasize, you know, what is important? What are we doing? Why do we exist? And so we moved back. We love living in North Canton. My son loves it. It's been a real privilege because we started in our living room and all kinds of things. We saw the Lord bring things together, even finding and buying our house, which I won't take the time to go through it, but we should not have been able to get the house we got, but we could just see the Lord's hand in leading us. And that would be the place that, you know, we would have most of our Bible studies, having other people who the Lord brought to us at the beginning who were on board. And I think, Ben, you'd agree with this too. You know, it's not just on us as planters, but who you do ministry with, who your future leaders are, your elders. It's not always what you do in life, but who you do it with that makes a big impact. And so it came out of different ways. But I think, you know, we find a similar philosophy of, you know, we have this beautiful heritage in confessional Presbyterianism. We have, I think, a biblical orthodoxy, which says, you know, this is Christ's church. We are vessels. We are ambassadors. We are heralds. We love the Lord and love people. Christ in him crucified. Whether you're preaching to 1,000 or 10 people,
yeah,
it's the same gospel.
Yeah.
And that is incredibly energizing. And I would say, I don't know what you would say, but I felt like planting a church, it wasn't that it was different, but if the highs were really high, the lows were low. It's not necessarily harder. It's just different. And my prayer life, I probably should be embarrassed, but my prayer life was so strong at the beginning because you're like, Lord, you've got to do this. I cannot do this. I mean, how do you plant a church? I'd never planted a church. So I moved to North Canton, Ohio. My experience was in a very different context. How do you plant a church? Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. And in Psalm 127, unless the Lord builds the house, those who labor in vain. And so in a lot of ways, you can have great strategies, a great vision and purpose, and I'm not discounting any of that. But at the end of the day, if God is not in it and going before, and I think we both experienced certain things leading up to it that were confirming to say, yeah, this is, we need to do this. And I get, you know, not everyone's called to do it, but I think that's why it's, again, great coming to Twin Lakes, because you see there definitely is an emphasis on missions and evangelism and apologetics and church planting, and that's contagious, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I think so. You guys have both spoken about planting Ordinary Means of Grace churches. It was even joked about. Chad Vegas was joking about that in his lecture, but
right,
he also was really emphasizing something really important, just that we need to have the faith to take God at his word,
yes,
and to understand the way Paul says in Romans 1 and how he's not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation for all who believe, the Jew and the Gentile. And if we truly believe that, then that needs to be our main activity,
yeah, right,
preaching the gospel, yep, administering the word, also prayer, sacraments, etc. But that needs to be the main focus. So churches and Christians can be involved in a lot of other things, and there are a lot of other supporting ministries. This is one, you know, what right, we do at Reform Forum, but Reform Forum is not directly involved in the work of the Great Commission. We're providing resources and trying to give them to churches so that the churches go out and, to use a phrase that Chad used to describe his work at Missionary, another organization, to inspire and educate the church to do the work of the Great Commission, which is baptizing and teaching,
yep,
everything that the Lord has commanded. Those are the important things. So back to where I was going with the question to begin with, you speak about planting Ordinary Means of Grace churches. I think those people who watch or listen to this program will certainly agree, and they'll be on board and want to do that. when I'm looking for you two to maybe add some color to this, I don't think we need to defend why we should do it. That's a good point. Yeah, sure. But the question is, what does it look like in practical terms to plant an ordinary means of grace church? I'm wondering, like, nuts and bolts, like, yeah. Nothing is too basic here to discuss. But what does that look like rather than just establishing some sort of like theology club or a group of like-minded people that have certain stylistic preferences, right? Like what does it look like to actually plant a church that way? Yeah. You have a little bit of experience in the sense that you're bringing people with you.
Yeah.
You've already been worshiping with. Yeah. Your situation is a little different.
Some people who had been apart, but I would say, and by God's grace, we particularized, which in Presbyterian speak just means we had our own elders and became our own localized particular church in 2021. But I would say probably 75% of the people who didn't come because they were looking for ordinary means of grace. Yeah. That phrase would have been
important to them. Yeah.
But they just knew they wanted the Bible.
And
they didn't want politics or moralism or entertainment or all these things. They just wanted, give us the word and where we take God seriously and we hear about what Christ has done, not just how to be a better dad or a better, you know, how to live your life happy and healthy.
Ben, what's been your experience over there?
Well, I think what Lee said there is true for us. We had people who found us because they were looking for a Reformed church. Uh-huh. We have people who they've been here for 3 months and they said, what does this word Reformed mean?
Yeah.
I've never heard this word before, you know? But they're here because they think this is where I get the Bible. Yeah. You open the scriptures, you tell me what it says, you know, you apply it to me. Uh-huh. And so, it's not lecturing, but it's also not story time with Pastor Ben.
Right.
And so you just kind of fit that thing where people have a hunger for that.
Right.
And so you're able to give them what I think their righteous desire is. But for us getting started, we started with a Bible study in my house. And we did that for maybe 6 to 7 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, different things I read, you're supposed to have 50 people in a Bible study before you get started with worship. And I said, we might never have 50 people. Yeah. Like we're in Southwest Utah. You might never have 50 people. So if we wait until that, we'll never start, you know? Right. And so then we decided, you know what, we're just going to start. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, our average attendance in the first few months was maybe somewhere in the mid 20s. You know, I remember one time we had we started in August and then that fall, it's like the plague hit and people were dropping all over the place in church. And so I remember one specific Sunday I looked out and I thought, this is a Bible study. This is not Sunday morning. We could fit in the Sunday school room in the back of the Lutheran that we're using comfortably. And it was kind of sobering because you go from being the senior pastor to a large church anyways, you know, morning and evening service and your evening is at 100 people and you're like, oh, you know, that's okay. And then you go to where I'm at and, you know, I'm looking out and there's like 15 people and, you know, a third of that is my family. Mm-hmm. And then it just felt like it almost felt like you were living in a different world.
What are the temptations in that moment? Because I imagine many people have had that experience. I know a lot of people in my circles have that experience, not at church plants, but just in churches that might be struggling or may need to be revitalized. But in those moments when you're looking out and you're my all-time low at a service was I was doing pulpit supply, but it was 11 and I brought one of them. So there was 10 people there other than me that I didn't bring. And in those moments, some guys it's easy to become discouraged.
Yeah.
And then the next question might be, what do we do about it? And I think that's where people start to entertain other ideas. Maybe we should be doing something different, or maybe just focusing on the ministry of the word, sacraments and prayer isn't enough.
Yeah.
That's where you start to hear those whispers.
Where I think I talked about a little bit ago, the sufficiency of scripture to say like, well, you know, yeah, I mean, we had similar Sundays too, where you look out and go, oh, what am I doing? But then, and meanwhile, we know we have this theology of it's, you don't count numbers, and it's not about the size, but then just the practical reality. You're planting a church and you're wondering, especially if there's, I mean, we had some low Sundays where I'm like, boy, I hope visitors don't need to come today. Cause if they come today, they're going to think, what is this cult? Like, it's a small, this is awkward. So it's, you know, I always felt that in planning a church, or even just in the regular ministry too, numbers are important. I think we're more spiritual. Oh, numbers don't matter, but they're part of the story, but they're not the whole story. So God can be doing a blessing work, and you can have growth, and you praise Him, and He gets all the glory for it. They're part of the story. They're just not the whole story. So you don't want to become so self-righteous, like, we don't care about numbers, and then you end up when you got down 10 people. So it's okay to ask the question, am I doing something wrong?
But it's quite possible.
It's quite possible maybe, we are. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you.
But so, you. So right. I know. Like, but just like, yeah.
Maybe I'm driving maybe, people away because right, exactly. I'm a jerk. It's possible.
So I think, you know, I look at it as if
I've seen
I'm,
a lot of bad right, churches. Yeah, that close,
that's right.
You know?
So I think, you know, back to that sufficiency of the scripture. Am I teaching the word? Am I preaching the word? Am I seeking to apply the word faithfully? Am I visiting people I know? Am I doing the work of a shepherd, and let God handle the results of that. But yeah, it's sometimes tempting to think like, well, you know, I think was it Spurgeon, or usually Spurgeon works when you say these kind of quotes, but
it might have been Abraham Lincoln.
It could have been Abraham. Calves and six, Abraham Lincoln, 1862. I saw that on the internet, but you know, I think Spurgeon said, others may preach Christ better than I do, but nobody preaches a better Christ than I do. And so, yeah, it's tempting sometimes. And like friends in seminary, I said, oh man, I wish I could preach like Ben Coppers. I wish I could minister or had the leadership skills or the personality of so and so. I got some great advice because I'd been an assistant pastor, so I hadn't regularly been in the pulpit before. I mean, I'd get to preach a couple times a year. But someone gave me good advice, said, you know, in preaching, it's obviously the communication of truth through personality. You want to be yourself in order to forget yourself in order to focus on Christ. So don't try to preach like R.C. Sproul or John Piper or any of these other guys. Just be yourself so that you can not make it about yourself. And so sometimes you have that temptation to say whether there's 200 people or there's 20 people. You have the temptation to say, well, this is a reflection of me. And you have to say, no, this is not about me. We are just, that's why I think the means of grace to your question, the reason why that's so important and helpful is it reminds us that we are just the messenger. We're not the message. And any, you know, Paul says, I planted, Apollos watered. It's God who gave the growth. And I think if you're tempted, I mean, I can't imagine planning a church or pastoring a church, if you didn't preach expositionally, to come up with, you know, lead thoughts or opinions or clever stories. I'm just like, but you know, I'm going through Genesis right now, so I know what I'm doing the rest of the year because it's like, this is where we're at in the text. I preached through 1 and 2 Corinthians before. And so it's like, hey, we're going to talk about money. This is not Lee's hobby horse. This is what God says. We're talking about issues of sexual ethics. You talk about the whole counsel of God, and there's actually great freedom in that, because you realize I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I'm not trying to do something. We keep on our bulletin every Lord's Day, Acts 2:42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, the fellowship, the breaking of bread, and the prayers. Not because, you know, just saying, oh, this is our theme verse for the year, but because we say this is what we believe the church is called to in any place and time. We just want to be the church in North Canton. We're not trying to be something revolutionary or new or fresh or hip. We just want to be God's people where He's placed us. And so we start with a Bible study in Ephesians, and you go through that and you preach the word. And it doesn't mean you just pop your tent and say, hey, we're a Reformed PCA church, everybody come. You got to do the hard work of getting to know people, inviting people in, having people over into your home, extending, Rosaria Butterfield does a good job of talking about this, extending, you know, the gospel comes with a house key.
Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of things that are really important. You don't have to be an extrovert, but at the same time, people are not just interested to know how smart you are.
You have to love people.
Right. You have to love people.
In the broadest of senses, but you can't fake that stuff.
You can't fake it.
In the long run, I mean, you can pretend to be nice to people. Yes. Welcoming, but it's,
and sometimes the challenges, and I know, Ben, you probably experienced this too. Sometimes you have people who are attracted to church plants.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they've struck out in leadership in other places. Yeah. And they think, this is my opportunity. Yeah. And particularly with, I was 34 when we started. And so you start to think, well, maybe I can shape and mold. And sometimes even early on, when you think like, oh, I'm so desperate to get anybody. And we want who God mm-hmm. wants to have. And sometimes I've had to tell guys, which is hard when you're only got 25 people in your church plant. Mm-hmm. I've had to tell guys like, hey, this might not be the place for you mm-hmm. because we believe God's called us to be a particular kind of church. And we're part of the kingdom. We're not saying that other churches in the area that preach the gospel aren't true churches. But we are saying, if you're looking for this over here, there are other places for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we want to be confessionally reformed and Presbyterian, which means we're going to emphasize these things.
Right.
And I think that is a helpful distinction. I've had to tell you, like, hey, it's okay. We can still be brothers in Christ and friends, and I can still shake your hand when I see you in the mm-hmm. grocery store. But this is who we feel called to be.
Were those the Christian mimes you were telling me about?
That's right. Yeah,
you had to tell them, but you had some trouble understanding what they were telling you.
Yeah, I couldn't hear them. But yeah, no, it's so sometimes you get people, and it goes against all your instincts.
Yeah.
But you realize, like, I'd say that's maybe one of the unique things about a church plant. If you've got some divisive or people who like to stir the pot, you got that in a 500 member church. You can kind of, but when you've got a smaller group as a shepherd, you got to protect the integrity of the church.
Yeah. It's really concentrated and more single or few voices can have a real outsized effect if it's not kept in check.
There's a question I always ask in our membership class or the inquirers class towards the end is, think of your least favorite thing about the church. Don't tell me because I don't want to know. But think about your least favorite part of the church. And if it never changed, would you still be content here? Mm. If the answer is no, then you need to find another church. Mm. Because I don't want people coming in and then a year later they're agitating
because
to make some kind of change.
Right.
It's not that I don't have any I'm not deluded enough to think that somehow our church is perfect the way it is.
Right.
But at the same time, we are who we are.
Yeah.
And if you want to come in and try to change the fundamental uh-huh. dynamic yeah. of the church, uh-huh. That's going to be unhealthy for the church as a whole. Like, uh-huh. And so that's where it's difficult to ask that question, though, because we've had people.
It's kind of like missionary dating. It's not that uncommon or that's not that far of a stretch to think about that. It's like, well, I mean, I could turn this guy into something that I want to marry.
Yeah,
but you don't join a church mm-hmm. on the presupposition or hope even that you think you're going to change some fundamental component to it.
And it's been a helpful question. We've had people go through the class and then they call me and they're like, this isn't for me. And I'm like, you know what?
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah. I would much rather have you say that now mm-hmm. than get 3-4 years down the road
Amen.
And you just become a thorn in the side, not just my side, of the church as a whole. And now we've all got to deal with this. It's just that. So that really it's better to preempt that. But as a church planter,
it's tough.
An extra two people, an extra family. You're not just like, okay, you've got people in the seats.
Or right.
Like, okay, budgets are helped, you know?
Right.
But going back to, like, what do you do on that Sunday when it's a Bible study and doesn't feel like a Sunday morning, One of the things that really helped me was knowing that I had a coalition of 40 churches behind us who were like, we're invested in a means of grace church that preaches the word in this community. And if I changed, they would be really upset. And rightfully so. Yeah. So I should be upset with myself if I was mm-hmm. trying to change anything. So it was of course the conviction, this is who we are. I'd rather have no church than become who I'm not and have the church be what we didn't set out to be. But having a team of people who are invested in a common mission, like, this isn't just about how many people can Ben bring in
the
door or, what can we do to get people? It's, you have people who love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I told everybody on the front end, Utah is a graveyard of church plants, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So don't think that you're investing in something you have any kind of guaranteed success. The Lord graciously has really done far more than I dare to imagine. But you tell them on the front end, like, this is who we are, this is who we're going to be. And the Lord may bless it and the Lord may not. And you have to be okay with that. That was great.
And that was, for me, in our context, what was always very encouraging, even when there are hard moments, is the recognition, I didn't dream this up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there were others who had been giving, who had been praying, even for years, for a PCA plant in North Canton. So it wasn't that I was like, oh, hey. So it wasn't necessarily my mission. It was something that we were being used and coming alongside to say, no, this is what the Lord is doing. And there's great freedom. And being Presbyterian too, that, you know, we eventually became how the Presbytery worked out. Instead of a borrowed session, we ended up becoming a daughter church of Grace Presbyterian in Hudson, Ohio. So I had my original session was an existing church plant. Red Dotson's still the pastor there. So my family on the Lord's Day, we had a church home already. Even while we're trying to get something going in North Canton, we have a place on the Lord's Day to go and link arms. And so we never felt isolated, or we never felt that, again, this is just something we're jumping off a cliff on our own. But the Lord's been working in people's hearts to bring us to this point. And when you don't say, okay, this is all, I've got to do this. The older I get sometimes, and as a senior pastor, I have sympathy for Moses. I get sometimes why he wanted to strike that rock again. Yeah. I'm going to get water from it. And maybe if I just swing my staff harder, and I've seen God do it before, maybe I can manufacture and force him to do it again. But you really say, no, this is, again, it's not my ministry. Yeah. It's the Lord's church. These are God's people. This is his bride. It's a humbling privilege. But sometimes we've got to get out of our own way.
And if you go into planting without the mindset, this is the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Right. I've been called to this. Like, yeah, those 15-person Sundays are going to kill you.
Yeah.
You're gonna think, this was such a bad career move. Yeah. Right. This, yeah. You know, and so you can have all those thoughts, but you know, talking about people praying, we have a number of members who drive from over an hour, well over an hour to come. And so a couple of those members, some of those members live over an hour north of us, and they live on family land. They have polygamous ancestry, you know, they come from generational Mormon family, and then, came to faith, became Reformed, and they had been praying for Reformed Church. I had no idea. They didn't know that we were thinking about it. And then, you know, the Lord answers their prayers. And that is such an encouragement to me. Just think, like, I'm not great. It's not like I'm so super. Yeah. But the Lord is using me to answer those prayers of those faithful saints who, you know, they weren't looking for which of these 10 NAPARC churches do I want to go to. They're like, we just want one Reformed church that we can go to.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been one of the most satisfying, gratifying parts, is being able to provide something that would otherwise people would have no access to.
Yeah, praise the Lord.
Let me ask a brief follow-up to that. I wanted to at least get this question in, or a version of it, before we wrap up. This has been tremendous, and I appreciate both of your emphasis on this, but especially that last emphasis, Ben, just on the sufficiency of Christ, and we need to place the emphasis on the sufficiency of his means. But often in church planting discussion, when you're talking to the people that do a lot of this, or like to talk about it or write about it, or their consultants that deal with it, there's lots of emphasis on various methods, or thinking about, you know, psychographic profiles of the community or the people you're trying to reach. It becomes, in effect, kind of like a marketing activity, you know? And I love marketing from one perspective, but maybe not so much in this church context. But if you're like, who's our ideal customer persona?
Right, yeah.
And who's the right person to set forth? It's a very kind of like strong man or charismatic man. I don't mean spiritual gifts, but right. You need to find the right, like a political candidate. Like, we need these votes. So who are we going to find? Let's find the guy and fit him in there. And then often people are looking for people with homegrown ties or roots in the area. this is not the case for you in the sense of where you grew up. It's more so the case for you.
Sure.
Sad. Like, so I'm we joke. Yeah, I know. I knew you're going to get one of those.
I had to get in one.
All right. So this is a very convoluted question, but my point is what, or my question is, my prompt is for you to expand on, and just if you have any thoughts on what it's like to plant a church, and we're still in the same country, and I'm sure there's a lot of commonality between Wisconsin, Illinois, and people in Utah, more so than there is difference. It's not a foreign planet, but you're in a, we don't deal with many Mormons in the Midwest where we are, not in this way. So you have these, all these added complexities, and you're an outsider, so to speak. You don't have those long ties the way that some of these people that have come to your church do. Perhaps a leading question, but how does just relying on Christ and the ordinary means of grace kind of liberate you to realize that you're not the one that has to check all the boxes to make this work?
Yeah, that's good. I think that what you see is people when they leave the LDS church, or when they have questions about the LDS church, a lot of times it's because they can't reconcile the Bible with the other things that they're looking at, or they kind of run into some cognitive dissonance that they're not willing or really able to reconcile anymore. And so just being able to have the scriptures and present them in a way that's coherent, okay. And I think as Reformed people, we're able to do that better than most, or maybe all, because you can paint the scriptures as one story. You're not adding this story with this story and trying to, you know, match things up. Like, it's one story from the beginning to the end. I can make it make sense. Now, does that mean that everything is equally easy to understand? Well, no, not at all. But so that's where being able to give people the scripture in a way that makes sense is so helpful. But as well, you know, it is in the country, we speak the same language, but in a lot of ways, people in the LDS church use the same words, but we have a different dictionary. When we say grace, we mean one thing, they mean something else. We say faith, and we say, you know, saved, salvation, they all mean different things. And so we had to really learn the LDS dictionary before you move. So that when you're having conversations, you know what the words mean, and it can still be kind of tiresome. I don't say that to speak negatively of our LDS neighbors, but you know, it can be difficult because you feel like you have to define different words all the time, but it's better to know that than to not know that, right? And so for us, it isn't like somehow I'm this custom made, you know, this is the ideal guy to move to Utah, right? But you put in the work on the front end, really learning, what am I getting into? Who are the people that I'm looking to reach with the scripture? So not how am I going to mold myself to be, you know, the ideal candidate, but who are the people in this community? And St. George has a heavy LDS population, and you're about 2/3 of the city, the region is what at least identified as being LDS. But about a quarter of the people have no religious affiliation. So you combine those two numbers, and you're at almost 100%.
Nothing in between.
Right.
Yeah. And a huge amount of those nuns are people who've left the Mormon church. And almost nobody leaves the Mormon church for Christianity, Orthodox Christianity. They leave for agnosticism or atheism. And so learning, hey, what's their experience been? You know, talking to those kinds of people as well. And then speaking with people who were Mormons at one point and now are Christians. What was your experience? What was your journey? Who helped you? What helped you most? You learn your context in a way that you don't have to do gimmicks that, you know, reach that context. But you do want to know who your people are and what's going to be most effective or meet them where they're at with the scripture.
So that's excellent. I mean, the real simple message here, which is good, is just, you know, preach and proclaim Christ from the scriptures. It doesn't need to be more complicated than that. But that protects you from feeling the guilt or the weight of having to whatever be, like you said, some custom made, you know, mix of a guy who plants. But I'm wondering what it's like for you, because some guys who have ties or a lot of background in a specific area might rely on those things, or because they're so custom fit for that area, that might also be a temptation to rely on those things too much.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, you're going to making your sermons about Ohio State football or something like that. You think these illustrations are always so great. They always have Woody Hayes.
Woody Hayes quotes left and right. And Jim Tressel quotes. But yeah, for me, you know, and when I was thinking about your question, for me, like, it's to what thinking about marketing, or even when you talk about starting a church and how, what metrics we use, to use the word metrics for success and failure. I keep coming back to Luke chapter 10. Jesus sends out his disciples and he sends them out two by two. He sends them out to do ministry, and they have great success. And they come back. One of the few times we find in the gospel accounts of the disciples doing well. pre-crucifixion, resurrection, the Holy Spirit coming to dwell in them. They come back and they're rejoicing, and they're so excited at how well things have gone. But Jesus says, and it's almost a rebuke, he says, you know, I saw Satan fall like from heaven like lightning. Do not rejoice that even the demons are subject to your name, but rather rejoice that your name is written in heaven. And whether you're a church planner or a pastor or a Christian, a man or woman, I think at the end of the day, what I come back to is my identity, who I am, is a child of God in union with Jesus Christ. In the moment, whether I have success or failure, and sometimes success is far more spiritually dangerous than struggle and suffering. But the moment I begin to put my identity in what I do, I think ministers, as elders, we'd all agree, something that's a natural temptation, a struggle to make a church plant or the health, you know, if the church plant's doing well, I'm doing well. If the church is struggling, then I'm struggling. We're not making widgets. It's not a usual calling or 9-to-5 job. But cultivating our union with Christ and coming back to the reality that who I am is a child of God, first and foremost. Being a pastor is the best privilege of my life. But there come a day when I won't be a pastor. Either I'll be dead or retire, but at the same time, that's not who I am. And I think, people, we have an opportunity in this culture and age where if you just sometimes be normal, we joke about Reformed Christians, just be normal, be a person. Like, how do you talk to people? How do you, whether it's evangelism or whatever, but be loving, be kind. When you take someone to lunch, don't just see like, well, is this person a future giver, a potential member? You know, it's like, just like, hey, what, you know, tell me about yourself. Get to know people, love people, serve with people. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, ministry is hard, but it's also a lot of fun. Yeah. It's amazing. These are God's people. These are his image bearers. This is the bride for which he came to die. And we get to hold forth the excellencies of who he is. We get to announce these great truths. Mm-hmm. We get to remind people who are going through great difficulty. And so I think I think you're right, Cam. Sometimes we do make it a little bit too much about demographics, or, if I could say, well, I'm from here, so I'm just going to invite all the people I went to high school with, or I'm going to invite all my relatives, and the church is going to be filled with all my friends. And maybe there's some temptation to that. But at the end of the day, it's like, no, it is ministry. It is the church, but it's the gospel. And the gospel is the best news. And the Lord is drawing in his people. And we have that great, being Reformed, being Calvinistic. It's not my words. It's not my clever presentation. It's not my eloquence. But it's in the clarity and power of the word preached and applied that God gathers his people. And it's free and joyful.
And you want them to keep doing that after you're gone.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm praying during the service sometimes for the church for generations to come, or 100 years from now. Well, simple math tells you I'm not going to be alive 100 years from now, right?
Right, yeah.
All kinds of people who've never heard of me,
yeah.
who don't care,
yeah.
you know, like, you know, you want to set up the identity of the church yeah. in a way that it's about Christ from the beginning, and that continues all the way through.
If anyone figures out how to live long times, can be a Dutchman, I think.
A tall probably. Dutchman,
probably.
One of our greats in the Presbytery of the Midwest was a man named Jim Bosgraf. He recently passed away. He was for a long time what we call an RHM, a regional home missionary. So at our presbyteries, you know, we'll often have that. We typically fully fund all of our church plants. There's good and bad to that. It's just different. And what Jim would do frequently is do work with all these core groups and try to get them started. But when he would speak to those first core groups, it might be three couples or something like that. He might be renting out he might be in someone's living room or renting a hotel meeting space or something like that. But he would often say that. He goes, look, this is going to be really hard. If we work on planning this church, it's not going to be always fun or convenient. You know, there are going to be a lot of these moments where it doesn't feel like a church. It feels like a Bible study. He goes, but you're not. You're doing this for the glory of Christ. We're doing this to be faithful, but you have to have that view that you're doing this for your kids and your grandkids.
Yes.
And that should be our prayer, that we're seeking to build something much greater than us, but even greater than our own time.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a universal church mindset that we're trying to plant for the honor of Christ, but realize that his kingdom transcends one particular generation and it transcends one particular location.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful. Lee Hutchings, Ben Coppers, wonderful to speak with you both. I really enjoyed it. Hopefully we can continue our conversation. You can tell us all the real funny stories once I shut the cameras down.
That'll be you gotta have the extra subscribers to the podcast.
Yeah. Join our Patreon.
Yeah, that's right. You gotta remember the really good stories behind the scenes.
Super chat.
Super chat
now. We'll give you the special code, whatever it is. Well, I do want to thank everybody for listening, for watching. We'll include links to the various churches so that people can follow up. Maybe people are in your areas, or maybe they know of people that are, and hopefully they'll connect either St. George or North Canton, wherever they may be. But this is wonderful. And if there's anyone out there interested in planting a church who just wants to learn more, you can reach out and send us an email at mail@reformedforum.org. We'd love to talk with you and pass on your name and information to, you know, the appropriate denominational people, whatever that may be. But we desire the same thing, that more confessional, faithful churches would be planted around the world, and that they would prosper unto the glory of Christ and in his strength. So thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. We hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.